Blog Talk Radio.
We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, do ordain and establish this Constitution of the United States of America.
Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for
this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
For peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
From the very heart of the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, from the soul of the Bellwether State, Missouri Grassroots Radio is live.
The Voice of Liberty is live. This is Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. This is the Friday Night Roundtable. I'm Dave. Lisa's here. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Dave. How are you?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Just dandy.
And Mike Smith is here from the Dallas County Fair Tax Group. Mike's also a member of the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Executive Board. How are you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm doing outstanding, Dave. And Lisa, how about y'all?
How are you?
Doing great.
All right, we're going to talk. This is going to be the Fair Tax Show tonight, and Mike's come along to join us because a lot of you listeners out there still have a little bit of question about the fair tax. If you'd like to address those questions tonight, call 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we've got a grass fire alert on right now. What's that all about, Lisa?
Okay. Missouri Grassroots Coalition has made it their mission to make sure that everybody in Missouri understands what happened with this crazy ballot language on SB 464. The Missouri House and Senate neglected to write ballot language for the Insurance Exchange Initiative, Proposition E, that will go on the ballot in November. Very unlikely for the Missouri House to ever and the Missouri Senate to ever do something like that with a ballot initiative. They usually do write that initiative, and consequently, if they don't write the ballot language, it goes straight to you-know-who, Robin Carnahan, who wrote some egregious ballot language, which is sure to fail at the polls because most people do not understand what's going on with that initiative, and they certainly won't understand it if they read what Robin Carnahan wrote. So we want you folks to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, go to the Grass Fire Alert page, and read what you see there. The ballot initiative language is there. We'd like you to contact all of your elected officials and let them know that we will not stand for this kind of behavior with our ballot initiatives. Contact them. There are sample emails for you to send, or you can send one of your own, and join the forums on our forum page and discuss this issue. And together, as grassroots conservatives, we'll take back our government and learn how to solve this problem.
Well, I don't guess I understand totally about the Carnahan language, Lisa. Isn't there a double check on that language? Doesn't that have to go through the Attorney General before it gets out?
I'm not aware of that, Dave. I think the Secretary of State gets to write that language, and I think it's done.
What do you think of that, Mike?
I think she's right. I think it's done. I don't know that the Attorney General has a opportunity to have a sign off on it before she can publish it. So I think it'll stand now unless it gets the challenge in court to turn it back, because I don't even think the legislature can do anything now since they're out of session.
Well, all right. That's a bummer. I'll tell you what, that language, if you don't know it, and I haven't got it memorized and I don't have it in front of me, but you can go to Missouri Grassroots Coalition, check on that grassroots alert, our grass fire alert button, and you can read the language. I don't care, Lisa and Mike, if you are the most progressive person in the world and you think that what Robin Carnahan did is good. There is no way, if you have an IQ of a potato, that you can look at that ballot language and read that initiative and believe that the two have anything to do with each other.
intentional twist of explanation, for sure. Robinson hands down this kind of thing. We also public awareness. It is not common practice for legislators to put a ballot initiative and run it through the legislature and approve it without writing their own ballot language. So there's some funny business going on here, and people need to know that their elected officials hugely dropped the ball on this issue. So, you know, you need to also make that fact known to your leaders that you do not appreciate their behavior on this very important issue of will affect insurance exchanges in Missouri if Obamacare goes through. You know, your voice should be heard on a lot of levels here.
Absolutely. And that's the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Grass Fire Alert. Go there. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. Click on the Missouri Grassroots Grass Fire Alert button. Go to the forum and read all about what our position is on this, and get involved by sending some of those emails that we give you a pointer to. We're going to come back here in just 1 minute and 5 seconds, and we're going to get on with the Fair Tax Show.
Here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, it's Christmas in July and August and September. Last year on Christmas Eve, MGC paid off the department store layaway accounts of two Missouri families who were not able to provide Christmas for their children. This year, we would like to at least double that number, and in an attempt to do that by the holiday season, we're asking you to consider donating a few dollars toward that effort. We know the holiday season is the most difficult time of year to ask for donations, so we're planning ahead and asking you to give whatever you can so that a few Missouri families will be able to celebrate at Christmas. Go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and look for the Secret Santa page. All the details are there for you to donate by PayPal, check, or money order. Conservatives have proven to be the most generous and most benevolent people in the United States. Please help us with this very small charitable project.
Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
That's it. The Voice of Liberty is back. Mike Smith is here. Lisa Payne-Nager is here. And I'm your host, Dave. This is the Friday Night Roundtable, and we're going to get right into the fair tax. Mike Smith, the Dallas County Coordinator for Missouri Fair Tax, tell us, in a nutshell, what is the fair tax?
Well, in essence, the fair tax is a replacement of our current income tax system. It moves away from taxing what you earn to taxing what you spend. So it's what they call a consumption or a sales tax. And so it basically takes away a lot of the power that politicians have to play the different games with doing exemptions and deductions and all the little benefits that they give to different corporations and different interest groups. And it puts the power back in the people's hands.
Okay. So basically, then, you would not pay any kind of tax at all to the federal government. If you work 40 hours for $10 an hour, you get a check for $400, and then you would not pay tax until you go buy something.
Absolutely, and that's the part that I guess it's kind of difficult for some people to understand, because they'll say that, well, we already pay a high sales tax rate and stuff now, but the thing that they don't take into consideration is there's basically 12.5% coming out right now for FICA for your Social Security and Medicare taxes. And that comes right out before you even get your final paycheck.
That's right. So any
wage earner gets cut out.
So any wage earner who makes a low enough amount of money, who works, you know, at a fast food restaurant or at Walmart or something like that, and says, well, I'm okay, you know, because at the end of the year I don't pay any tax, that isn't true at all, is it? They do pay tax.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. It's that Social Security tax and Medicare tax, and every one of you out there who makes a paycheck sees that come out of the paycheck. Are you a fair tax fan, Lisa?
You know, I'm one of those people that I'm trying to learn about it. I like the general premise of it. There are questions I still have about it. I'm trying to learn the differences between the fair tax and the flat tax. Obviously, we need to do something with the tax system. It's not working the way it is. I have had several people bring up one question that I've never heard anybody address, and there is a kind of a buzz around there about this, that this fair tax would just skyrocket a black market. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Mike?
Well, personally, I don't think that will happen because I don't think that you have that much black market activity going on right now anyway. The most thing that you've got going on right now as far as the black market is concerned is cash business. How many different people or small entrepreneurs and businessmen now do things for just cash only, and they never register or pay much less federal income tax on it, but they don't pay state income tax, they don't pay state sales tax and stuff on it, they don't even pay the local county tax on it. So there's a lot of, I guess, more black market, I think, going on now than what you would have underneath the fair tax.
So what you have here, in my opinion, the way I see it is, a guy could set up a shop and he could say, okay, I'm going to sell groceries, I'm going to sell clothes, I'm going to sell whatever, I'm going to sell cars, and I'm just not going to tell anybody that I sell these things, so you can come to me and buy this thing and not pay any sales tax and get it cheaper. Is that what we're talking about?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So what you're saying, Mike, if I understand correctly, is that in the first place, aside from the difficulty of doing that, I mean, you would have to be under the radar from the state tax people. You would have to be under the radar from the federal tax people. You would have to be totally under the radar to do this. And to stay under the radar that far, you would not be able to do this on a very large scale at all. And the scale that you could do this and that the number of people could do this does not hold any kind of candle to the black market that's going on right now, and that is the contractors, the waitresses, the people who do cash only business, who get a paycheck in cash every week and never pay any taxes at all.
Right, and now here's the key: one of the reasons why I think you won't have black market under the fair tax is because under the fair tax, it actually eliminates the embedded taxes that goes on between businesses right now that's built into the cost of the product that we don't even see. So if you buy something for $100, you already got anywhere from 20 to 30% already embedded into it, the taxes that other businesses pay. But under the fair tax, there is no business-to-business taxes. So if you're a small businessman or entrepreneur and you open up your landscaping business or whatever, the supplies and goods that you buy to use in the process of your business, if you're going to do it above board, you don't have to pay any taxes on what you purchase to use as far an end product. So it's in the businessman's interest to do it above board so that he gets to pay that cheaper price up front.
Oh, yeah, I see what you mean. So if I'm a grocer, and I'm trying to do this under the radar, the only way I can do it under the radar is to have to pay taxes on everything I stock my store with.
Right.
Yeah. So, but under the fair tax, if I'm a grocer and I do this legitimately, I don't pay any taxes on the stuff I stock my store with.
Correct, because you're gonna pass that on to
right.
the end consumer, which is basically what happens now, but it's in the best interest of the businessman to buy that above board.
Okay,
just like a contractor building a house or an addition onto a house, he has to buy wood, nails, material, all that good stuff. He can't produce that himself, so he has to buy it. So he's either going to have to buy it and pay sales tax on it if he's not registered as a business and just doing it by himself, or if he's a registered businessman or a registered business, he would get that business-to-business tax. I don't guess it's a deduction. It's a tax avoidance, and he doesn't have to pay that. So he gets those products cheaper, and the tax is only paid on those products when it's sold at the very end to the consumer, which is the way it should be.
Okay. And then on top of that, there's this other huge black market. I mean, aside from the legitimate business guy who's laying bricks and getting paid in cash, there's this huge other black market. And now, suddenly, you're going to be collecting tax at the purchase from every drug dealer, pimp, prostitute, car thief, everyone in the world who is not paying any kind of tax now. Because they're running this illegitimate business on the side, well, those people still got to buy groceries. They still got to eat. They still got to buy a pimp mobile. So now they're going to be paying some taxes, right?
They absolutely will. And if I remember correctly, I looked it up about a year and a half ago. And if I remember correctly, tourism itself in the United States is about a $200 billion business. So you start paying the taxes on that. Who's that going to relieve the tax burden on?
Oh, and illegal aliens. Illegal aliens get to pay tax, too. They eat, I think. They surely eat. So,
all the tourists coming from Europe and from Japan and South America or wherever that come here to see all the unique sites and experience the American culture, they would pay that tax just like they would when they go into Europe. Europe does that right now.
Yeah,
you have to pay that VAT tax over there. You have to pay those kind of taxes everywhere, but in America, you don't. The Americans get that, I guess, extra penalty there.
So let's sidetrack a minute here, because Lisa brought up another concern, and that is, what is the difference between, there's a lot of people out there still stomping the pulpit and pounding the podium about a flat tax. So what's the difference between a fair tax and a flat tax, Mike?
Well, the flat tax is still an income tax. The difference between the flat tax and the current income tax system, they're both progressive systems. We all know that our current tax code is so messed up and so many different pages that hardly anybody can ever comply 100% with it. But the difference between a flat tax is a flat tax basically just comes back and says that, you would be taxed 15% on the income that you make, and that's it. There'd be no deductions, no exemptions, no various credits. It's basically just a flat tax. And funny enough, that's how our current income tax system started, as a flat 3% tax. But it was only on the rich when it was first instituted.
Right.
And then it has since progressed. So that is what I believe the problem of trying to go back to a flat tax. How long will it take before special interest groups and all this and that and the other wind up coming back again, trying to lobby for special favors or benefits for their corporations, their groups, you name it?
Sure, because all the flat tax is going to be is after you arrive at this same adjusted gross income, quote unquote, that you arrive at now by taking all your deductions and all your corporate costs and all your, then you pay the same percentage as the next guy on that adjusted gross income. But there's still all the little nuances in there that let you make $100 million a year and bring that adjusted gross income down to zero.
Right.
Yeah.
And just to kind of give it a perspective on what some of those payroll taxes and stuff that come out right now, how much they amount to. An individual or family making $50,000 right now pays right at $7,500 a year for that tax. That extra $7,500 goes right into your bank account when the fair tax is instituted. So, for those that say that it's going to raise the price of goods, it's going to eliminate those embedded taxes that are already there. So cost of goods will go down due to competition and trying to keep that market share. And when that price goes down and you're going to have to pay that increase in your sales tax, people or families earning $50,000 a year are already going to have an additional $7,500 in their bank account to pay for that. And that doesn't even take into account the prebate that is built into the fair tax system.
What do you think of that, Lisa? Does that sound all right?
Well, I mean, it all sounds good. I'm kind of curious because I also, the premise of the fair tax is that, you only pay taxes on things that you buy. So I mean, you get to choose on how much money you spend and how much tax you pay.
Yes, and that benefits people because it changes the nature of Americans' culture right now. Right now, we're more of a debtor society or a debtor nation. We spend to buy now and put stuff on credit cards and everything else, take out loans, you name it. But the fair tax itself would wind up transforming that culture into one that puts us back as a saving nation. Because when you save money, you wind up building equity in the banks. The banks have more to lend, which provides cheaper interest rates and capital improvements for businesses, which leads to job creation.
Why does it make us such a savings nation?
I'm sorry, what?
Why does it make us necessarily a saving nation?
Well, let's look at it like this. If a person right now is in debt and they got various credit card bills that they want to pay off, they have more of an incentive to pay off that debt than to go ahead and continue spending at the same rate that they're currently in and just perpetuating it. Because you're not taxed on what you save. You're only taxed when you spend it. So it allows people to save up for those purchases where they usually discharge it on a credit card and wind up paying, you know, anywhere from 9% on up. So if you wanted to buy a $1,500 TV, it's more in your interest to save it up yourself till you get ready to buy it, and you buy it without paying that additional tax that you would to a credit card agency.
So using credit, we're going to be taxed additionally for using a credit card?
No. The credit card companies right now tax you. It's called an interest rate. It's not a tax.
If you pay your credit card off.
It has nothing to do with that.
If you pay your credit cards off every month, you don't pay an additional tax.
Right, but how many Americans actually do that?
No,
it has nothing to do with the tax with the credit card companies. The credit card company, it saves you money by not putting it on your credit card. Let's say right now I make a decision. I want to buy this $1,500 Samsung TV. I can save up money, put away enough money once a month or whatever, so that I can buy that and just pay cash for it. Or I can go ahead and charge it right now on my credit card and pay on my credit card monthly. However, when you add up the interest rate that the credit card company will charge you, by the time you save up on your own, you're going to wind up paying more for that TV by buying it through the credit card company.
Well,
so
I guess
it starts changing around the culture of America that way because it saves you money.
I guess what Lisa is asking is how does the fair tax change my need for instant gratification? The need for instant gratification is the whole culture that makes me go out and get everything I want on a credit card today. How does the fair tax change that culture?
Well, personally, I think it changes the culture when you start looking at your sales tax receipt and you start actually seeing the amount of taxes that you wind up paying.
I
saw a report. I'm sorry?
So I stop buying things? I buy less?
Well, that is theoretically, Lisa, that is true. That is true. And we know for a fact that whatever we tax, we create less of. So we know for a fact that as long as you tax income, you're going to have less people driving for income or driving for more income. So when you tax spending, we know that you're going to spend less.
Okay. And this goes for food as well.
Well, I mean, you're going to have to eat. You're going to eat.
But see,
now.
That's what makes the fair tax system a more consistent source of revenue. It weathers out a consumption or a sales tax weathers out economic downturns like recessions much better than the income tax. Because look what happens when a recession hit. People lose jobs. But people still wind up buying food. People still need to replace clothes for the kids as they grow. Kids still outgrow their shoes. The thing about it is there are essential things that are routinely purchased all the time, regardless of whether or not you have a job.
Go, Lisa.
How much will it cost me to buy a gallon of milk?
What do you pay for a gallon of milk now, Lisa?
It's like $3.20 something.
Let's call it $3.
Okay.
Okay, what's the fair tax going to be, Mike? 22%?
23%, yes.
Okay, the fair tax is going to be 23%. So right now, Lisa, 26 to 30% of the cost of that gallon of milk is tax. You don't know that. You don't
so
know that.
$4 now to buy a gallon.
No, it isn't.
No.
You've
got $3.29 right now being spent on milk. So you take $3.29 times 0.26, which is the amount of the embedded taxes that are in there.
89 cents.
Cost of good right now. So that winds up being 86 cents right now as taxes already built into that gallon of milk. So you take that 85 cents out. And that winds up bringing that gallon of milk price down to 43. And then you take that amount times the 23%, your price for a gallon of milk right now should be right around $3.
So 29 cents less than you're paying right now, with you paying a fair tax.
So there's already built-in taxes in that milk now, is what you're saying, with a fair
tax.
So what am I paying at the cash register then? If I'm already paying $3.25 at the cash register and they're charging me sales tax,
that's your local county taxes predominantly, and it's also that your state taxes. But what happens right now behind the scenes that you don't see and doesn't show up on your receipt when you buy it? That farmer that winds up, the dairy farmer that gets the milk and he gets it and he sells it to somebody that processes it and all that stuff, there's a tax transaction between that dairy farmer and that milk company that pasteurizes it, puts it in a gallon jug and puts the labels on it and all that good stuff, and then they turn around and sell it to a grocery wholesaler. There's a tax transaction between that milk company and that wholesaler. And then that wholesaler winds up selling it to your local grocery chain, and there's a tax transaction between them. All those different tax transactions are built into that final cost of that good.
Because corporations don't pay taxes.
Okay, and
people
then tax when I buy it.
Right.
Now. But what you're saying is all those middleman sales taxes go away. Price of a gallon
of milk. Exactly, because there is no business-to-business sales taxes under
and
the fair tax.
And there's no and remember now, more than 3/4 of that 26 to 30% tax is the income tax. See, those corporations, the farmer is paying an income tax. The guy that bottles the milk is paying the income tax. The guy that transports the milk is paying an income tax. The guy that wholesales the groceries is paying an income tax. And the grocer is paying an income tax. And all business tax goes away.
Right, because you're right. Because it is those payroll taxes at those individual businesses on top of the corporate tax that is charged to them by their state, by their county, and by the federal government. That's why it's about 26 to 30% of taxes are built into your cost of your goods before you even pay your local state sales tax when you buy it.
So look at your pay stub, and whatever you see on there in Social Security and Medicare tax, that's only half of the tax bill. The employer is paying the other half, and that tax is gone. The employer is not paying that anymore.
Right. The 7.5% shows up on your check. The other 7.5% winds up being paid by the business.
Import. Right.
In addition to their corporate income tax paid to the state and the federal government.
And of course, all those taxes get rolled around and end up in that gallon of milk.
So it's more or less a break-even proposition.
It is.
But it's better off for the businesses because they...
Well, it's not a break-even. It's not a break-even proposition for you, Lisa, because aside from that 22% tax, that 26% tax that you just paid for that gallon of milk, you pay an income tax. Now, when you go and pay 22% tax for that gallon of milk and still end up getting it 12 cents cheaper, you don't pay any income tax. That is your tax. That's all your tax. You don't pay any Social Security tax. You don't pay any Medicaid tax. You don't pay any income tax. That's your tax.
Okay, let me ask you this question. That sounds fine. So I'm not paying federal income tax. Am I paying state income tax?
That's up to your state. Now, Mike, talk to us about what Missouri's trying to do there.
Missouri is one of the states, and it has been one of the leading ones in the past, to try to pass a, I guess you could say, a state version of the fair tax. They call it, in the past, they've called it the Jobs and Prosperity Act, or FEAL. I can't remember which one it is right now. But, yes, they are looking at that. At one point, about 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, they actually passed the fair tax bill in the Missouri House, and then it wound up going to the Senate, but it didn't get passed through the Senate before the session ended, so the bill died. And since that time, they've been trying to go ahead and pass a similar version of it to go ahead and institute and eliminate the income tax in the state of Missouri and go full consumption or sales tax, like many states do. Well, I won't say many. There's actually seven that do not have an income tax but have a sales tax only.
And
Tennessee is one. Go ahead.
Do we know how much that tax would be?
They're looking right now, and I don't remember the latest number.
Seven to 9% is what they were talking about in this latest drive, Mike.
Yep, okay. And I think they had that phased in so they wouldn't all get it once.
Right.
And one of the things that they're trying to do is they've been trying to do comparisons to some of the different states so that they could find out what the economic impact would wind up being. Tennessee happens to be one of those states that is so close to Missouri, it's actually not funny. I mean, the amount of income that the people make is relatively close to ours. The distribution, as far as the different wages, are pretty similar. You look at the amount of population is relatively similar. The main differences, though, that you start seeing when you start comparing Tennessee to Missouri is that Missouri's economic situation is improving at a far faster pace. And more businesses are moving to Tennessee because, one, the tax structure is much better. You don't have state legislatures trying to play games with tax credits to lure businesses in. There is no corporate or business tax under the fair tax. So every business has an incentive to come here. And the states that implement it first will be the ones that wind up having that business base faster than the other states. And the thing about it is, when those businesses start coming in, you wind up having more jobs created because of that. Because you have more people there, your tax base increases. So you could even wind up lowering your sales tax rate because, remember, in states, they usually have a balanced budget. So if we keep on our politicians to keep or quit spending as much, you could actually lower that sales tax rate.
So there you go. Now that is a benefit of bringing a fair tax to Missouri is the attraction of business. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to ask Mike to translate that attraction to business to the national fair tax scene, and we're going to see what a fair tax on the federal level might do to attract business to the United States in general. We're going to take a break. We got Mike Smith with us here. Lisa's with us tonight. I'm Dave. This is the Missouri Grassroots Radio Network.
Okay, Missouri Patriots, I don't have to remind you that our ancestors fought and died for our right to exercise our voices and shape government in the interests of the people. And yet, in most elections, less than 20% of the population bothers to vote. Gas prices are outrageous, the economy is a disaster, and we are being regulated to death. Bad government and weak leadership are destroying the American way of life on a national and state level, and it's time to send a message to Washington, D.C. and Jefferson City and tell them we have had
enough.
If you're not registered to vote, the deadline to be eligible to vote in the August primary is July 11th and October 10th for the general election in November. The Patriot Revolution begins in 2012, and it happens at the polls. Vote in the August primary and the November general election, and bring a friend. The Constitutional Republic depends on it.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Vote and bring a friend. It would be really great if that friend kind of agreed with you politically, and you brought him along. Don't bring any dead friends. Don't bring any dead friends. Don't bring any friends three times, but bring a friend. You were saying something, Lisa.
Yes, I'd lock your liberal friends in the closet on August 7th, but bring the rest of them.
Yeah, yeah. And the on August 7th, the well, we don't care. We really don't care what those people on the other side of the ticket do on August 7th. But in November now, we're doing something different this year. Conservatives will vote between 7 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon, and liberals will vote between 8 in the evening and 10 in the evening.
That works.
Okay. So,
there are ballot initiatives, though, on August. Are there not? No, those are in November. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
No, there's one. There is one. It is the judge thing. It is the court thing. The appointment appointment of judges issue. Yes, that is going to be on the August 7th ballot.
Okay,
Mike. Now, you talked to us about the fact that Tennessee is attracting more business because they've gone to this consumption tax and with no tax on corporations at all. So how would a scenario like that translate to the federal or fair tax on a national level?
Okay, there's basically four that I've got jotted down here real quick that I'd like to cover that kind of addresses that.
Okay.
The very first thing is that you've heard about repatriation of dollars from overseas. Basically what that is you've got corporations overseas that may be U.S.-based and has businesses and stuff here, but they earn that money overseas. So they have to wind up paying taxes in that country. But to bring that money back over to the states to expand factories or business operations in the states, right now under current tax law, they have to pay the U.S. tax on that money too. So it's double taxation. So if they're paying 25% to 35% overseas, trying to bring that money back here, you're going to have to pay that same amount again. Who wants to pay 50% to 60% on your profit in taxes? So what happens is, under the fair tax, there is no tax on that money. So there's about $3 trillion, I think, is the latest number that I've heard, sitting overseas that businesses would be able to bring back to the states with no tax penalty. $3 trillion is more than three times the amount that was spent on the stimulus to try to help.
There's a first-year GDP bump of $3 trillion?
Very well could be, if they choose to bring it all here.
Okay.
Now, the other thing that I would like to point out, too, is that, you know, you talk about that jump or that bump in GDP. Other economists have sat there and estimated that if the fair tax is instituted, up to about the first 3 to 5 years, you could see a growth in GDP anywhere from between 8 to 13% per year.
What causes that?
That repatriation of money back to the states. The other thing that could help with that is the export of U.S. goods to overseas. This is a part that many people don't know or understand. But right now, under the World Trade Organization rules, countries can deduct sales tax from the cost of their goods that they are exporting. So all those European countries and, you know, products made in Korea or Taiwan or wherever, Japan, they can deduct their sales tax from their cost of goods. So if they're selling something for $100 and back out 30% in taxes, and or whatever, they drop that price again when it comes over here, which makes our product hard to compete against. The thing about the fair tax is, right now, we don't have any sales tax on a national level to be able to deduct from our cost of goods. So all of our payroll tax, our Medicare, Social Security taxes, all those things that are built into it, we can't deduct. All of the corporate business tax, income tax, we can't deduct it from it. But if you switch to the fair tax, all that goes away. You can lower your price of goods. And then the sales tax on the national level would wind up getting deducted from those costs of goods. So it winds up being a boom for what we export, which means our businesses in the United States could become more competitive, be more profitable, earn more income, and bring more money back to the states. And that's part of one of the reasons why they talk about 8 to 13% growth. And compared to what we had, I think, what was it last time? Overall 1%, 0.9%?
Right. 0.9.
You start talking 8 to 10 to 13% GDP growth, that means jobs. That means people going back to work. That means businesses expanding, warehouses expanding, manufacturing opening up, new plants being built, which means that you could wind up having better wages for people too.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Has there been data on the fair tax issue in other states where it's been a job creator?
Well, Mike was telling us.
I didn't hear the first part of that.
Go ahead.
Data.
Have there been any hard? Is there data from any hard studies on states that have gone to the consumption tax, consumption only tax, doing better than states that are not?
Oh yes, rich states, poor states. It's an annual publication that's put out by, I want to say Art Laffer. I think it's the one that does it. I think it's his company or his institute that does that. And those states did weather and outperform the other, 43 states that did have an income tax. The recession did not hit them as hard because, remember, like I said before, your revenue stream is more consistent.
The seven
so
states
they did better that way.
In last year's report, the seven states that do it as a consumption-only tax were in the top 10.
Yes, they were. Yep.
And there have been, and as Mike was saying before, there have been, and the studies are out there. I've read them. I can't tell you where to go to find them, but you could Google them. The studies are out there that do plot Missouri and Tennessee head to head, because like Mike said, we are absolutely a sister state to Tennessee in demographic and in the manufacturing base and the agricultural base and in what percentage of our income comes from what different sectors. We are a mirror of Tennessee, and there are absolutely studies out there that show how much better Tennessee is doing than Missouri.
And if you wanted to look that up, that is actually in Chapter 2 of Rich States, Poor States. I want to say 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, they had a whole chapter doing a comparison of Missouri potentially moving to the a fair tax type state and comparing them to Tennessee, since statistically they are so much alike in so many different ways. And their conclusion was Missouri would be much better off economically at the state level, and their citizens would be much better off economically if they implemented the fair tax. And I believe that from their website you can download that chapter just by itself.
Also, another study, I mean, you want to talk about hard data, Google up the Purdue study on the fair tax. It's an older study. It was done by Purdue at the behest of the Speaker of the House. And it was a survey. It was a survey of overseas companies. And 45% of the CEOs and owners of overseas companies who took this survey said that if the United States adopted the fair tax, that the next factory they opened up would be in the United States. And another 22% said that they would close their entire operation and move their headquarters to the United States of America if we did that.
You're absolutely right, Dave, and that was my fourth point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To it. No, it worked perfectly into the flow of the conversation, and that is true, and I have seen that same report. And that's another reason why it talked about the 8 to 13% increase in your GDP, because those businesses, we would become more advantageous for them to operate in the United States, whereas right now, the reverse is happening. Businesses are fleeing to go overseas to find a better way to make a profit overseas. That reverses once you institute the fair tax. And we wind up becoming those tax haven type countries that businesses move to. They start moving to the United States. And again, it increases job opportunities for people, which is what we dramatically need. You know, they start talking about a jobs bill. If they implemented the fair tax, it is a jobs bill.
Okay, I have a question.
Go ahead.
So are there any studies, okay, since, you know, we're all tired of paying taxes and we have a $15 trillion debt and, you know, they're not cutting spending and we need money to pay off our debts. If we go to fair tax, how does that affect the tax stream, the federal tax stream? Will we paying more taxes, less taxes? How do we know?
The way that the fair tax bill was instituted and designed was to be revenue neutral, to keep the same revenue type stream that was coming in. So in that regard, it would not change the spending problem that we have, but the fair tax is only a revenue type bill. It only affects the amount of revenue that comes in for them to spend.
That's how they came up with the 22%. They said, this is how much money we make now. This is how much Americans buy. We need 22% of that to make the same amount of money we're making now.
Okay. Interesting.
And the beauty of the fair tax, aside from that, is that now there is going to be direct pressure on Washington to bring costs down. Yeah, it is revenue neutral, but now the taxpayers are walking out of the grocery store, walking out of Kmart, walking out of Walmart with a receipt that tells them you paid this much tax. And, you know, there is nothing more insidious to the American taxpayer than to have his go out and win a lottery. Go out and win a lottery. What do you make? What do you make? Last year, $47,000, $60,000. Go out now and win a lottery for $60,000, and you get to write a check right now for about $7,000?
More than that.
$60,000. Yeah, you're going to get to write a check for about $12,500. You don't realize when you make $60,000 a year, that you paid $12,500 in tax because it came out a little bit at a time. It came out every week. You didn't feel the pain.
And that was one of the reasons why the federal government instituted the payroll tax to begin with.
Exactly right.
Most people are concerned with the check they get and what they see. You know, you may get hired for a job making $30,000 a year, but that doesn't mean you bring home $30,000. When you start paying your taxes and everything else that are taken out before you even get your check, you don't make anywhere near that.
Okay, so now when I talk to people about the fair tax, the biggest complaint I get from the progressive is that it is unfair. It is not a fair tax. It is, in fact, an unfair tax because Aunt Joan, who is a single mother with two kids currently, does not pay any income tax, and now she's going to have to actually be paying the federal government tax when she goes to the grocery store to buy milk and bread for her kids. And when we come back from this break, Mike is going to talk about how that's going to work.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio.
get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
With the August primary looming in about 7 weeks, we find the time is running out on who we vote for. Are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Do the representatives we send to Jefferson City really care what you think, or do they do the bidding of the special interest groups and lobbyists? It's your choice. You can elect a true citizen legislator or an establishment politician who takes his marching orders from the party elitists and his donors. Either way, time is running out for our state and country. Hear the clock of freedom ticking? I'm Terry.
His life so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
Okay, we're back. We've only got 10 minutes left, so we're gonna talk about this as thoroughly, but as quickly as we can. Mike, what about Aunt Jane, who's a single mother of two kids? She's currently not paying any tax. She might even be getting a little earned income credit at the end of the year. Now, do we expect her to go to the grocery store and start sucking up her share of the tax burden?
No. No, we don't. Because of that rebate that we mentioned earlier, looking up for one adult household with two children, looking at the annual rebate, it shows about $4,200 right now is what they will receive a check. That amount is an annual amount, but monthly they'll receive a check of $351 to offset that tax that they would wind up being paid at the grocery store. Or for those clothes, or for those shoes. So in addition to each individual being able to keep that 7.5% of their payroll tax, they would also get that rebate. Every person receives that to offset the amount of goods or amount of tax that would be paid on what is considered essential goods and services that people need up to the poverty level.
Okay, so while you said that, now I was sitting here doing some quick math, and if Jane is going to get $351 a month, and she is paying 22% tax on the stuff that she buys, she actually getting enough money to pay the tax on $1,595 worth of expenditure. So up to $1,595, she's not paying any tax. Is that right?
Correct.
Assuming my math is right, and it is. She doesn't pay any tax up to $1,595 because we've already given that back to her.
Correct, and that's the beauty of the prebate. It doesn't wait and give it back to you at the end of the year. It gives it to you on a monthly basis when you actually need it to offset that tax.
And this is a fair tax now because you got that same money. Nobody pays any tax until they hit whatever the poverty level for their family structure is.
Correct.
Right. So, I mean, this is totally fair. Aunt Jane isn't paying any tax at all. She wasn't paying any tax yesterday. She isn't paying any tax today. In fact, at $1,595 expenditure, she's probably still making about the same amount of money she was making. She's actually getting more than she's spending in tax because she probably isn't spending $1,595 a month for her two kids. I mean, unless she is making a significant amount of money, she's not. If she is in that income level that we've been talking about that needs this, that worries about that, she isn't currently spending $1,595 a month.
No, and that ties in again to what I was saying earlier about changing you to a saving type nation, because when money is tight under the fair tax, they do get more money, but also it is in their best interest to start paying for things by cash to avoid that extra charge that we get from trying to live in the moment, per se, and buying those expensive things and trying to pay for it later not realizing that that $30,000 you run up on your credit card bill is going to take you 30-plus years to pay it off unless something dramatic happens.
And then there's the added advantage to Jane of what we talked about in the very first 4 minutes of this conversation, and that is if Jane works at Walmart 40 hours a week for $10 an hour, Jane brings home $400.
Correct. And the thing about it is, it says that, well, this has wound up being the same percent, so the rich are going to make off better. Not necessarily, because it's based upon what you spend.
Right.
Now, if you spend $100 and wind up paying 22% off of that, you're paying $22 in taxes.
Right.
But if you wind up spending $1,000, you're paying $222 in taxes. Or 223,
exactly.
Sorry.
When I go
and
buy
so
new...
They have more discretionary income to spend on things, so they are still going to be paying much, much more in taxes than the rest of us would.
Absolutely. When I go replace my wardrobe, I don't spend nearly as much as Donald Trump does when he goes and replaces his. When Lisa goes and buys a new car, she doesn't spend near as much as Warren Buffett when he goes and buys a new car.
Right. And for those that go out and buy a boat so they can go fishing in, that
right.
you're not gonna pay what they do when they go out and buy their yachts so that or their sailboats so that they can kind of go off the coast and throw parties on.
Okay, so
you're paying thousands of dollars there in taxes, or we wouldn't.
This was a primer tonight. We're going to have Mike back once in a while. Might have him on the Hour of Truth once the election is over and we get on talking to politicians every night. We're going to continue with this fair tax discussion. We're going to expand on this. You listeners out there, the best thing you can do is go to Barnes & Noble, go to Amazon.com, go somewhere, spend $6 the last time I bought it. It may have come down now. For the paperback book, The Fair Tax, and it's an easy 2.5 to 3 hour read, and it will give you the Fair Tax 101 version of exactly what we're talking about here, the little nuances. Now, there are many intricacies that we will go into later as we expand on this, how this gets new businesses to our shore, what that does for the economy, how it stimulates the economy. And here's something that we're going to talk about next time. You hear politicians say over and over and over again, the first thing I'm going to do when I get to Washington, D.C. is I'm going to trim $1 trillion off of the budget. I'm going to trim $1 trillion off of spending. Well, the fact of the matter is that's bullshit, because you cannot go to Washington, D.C. today. I would love to. I would love to trim $1 trillion. I'm sure everyone here would love to trim $1 trillion. But you can't go to Washington, D.C. today and trim $1 trillion because of the Keynesian way that we've been living. If you trim $1 trillion, you are going to suddenly dump 1 million more people on the unemployment market. So before we can talk about trimming $1 trillion, and this is how the fair tax does tie into spending cuts, before we can even talk about that, we have got to have the private sector growing at the same rate we are shrinking the public sector, or we're inviting doomsday. Am I right, Mike?
You are absolutely correct.
So we're gonna get into that. I know that was just a brush over, but we're going to get into that next time we talk in a little bit more detail and how that's exactly going to have to work, or you are absolutely not going to be able to trim federal spending at all. Lisa, what you got coming up Wednesday?
Oh, caught me off guard. We've got Cynthia Davis and Bill Slance, Libertarian candidate for the Congressional Second. We're kind of having a third-party alternative theme on Wednesday night, and we'll have Randy Noble talking about Sharia law.
All right. Sounds good. Cynthia is such a fun interview. You are going to love that. I spent 90 minutes with Cynthia a couple of weeks ago, and that is just informing and at the same time so entertaining. Cynthia is just a hoot. Von Carriker is going to talk to us Tuesday night on the Show Me Common Sense Hour about elder abuse and some of the recent law that's changed on elder abuse and how big of a problem this is in our country, and how we as conservatives ought to be looking at that instead of trying to legislate anything away, how we'd ought to actually be tackling these kinds of problems. Monday night on the Hour of Truth, I am going to talk to Mike Moon, who's running against Billy Long down in here in Mike in my corner of the state, to get a real conservative into the House of Representatives. And we're going to talk to Ed Martin, who is running for Attorney General. Pick up the podcast of yesterday's Hour of Truth if you want to hear Ed Martin's would-be opponent, Adam Warren. That was an excellent interview. Adam's a very bright guy, and I think he'll give Ed Martin a run for his money. That's what we got coming up next week on Missouri Grassroots Radio Network. Mike Smith was with us tonight. Mike is a member of the Executive Committee at Missouri Grassroots Coalition. He is also the coordinator for Fair Tax Missouri in Dallas County. Thanks for coming along, Mike. It was very informative, and I really, really draw both here on the air and off the air when we talk on your knowledge of how this thing works.
Not a problem. It was a pleasure to do it, and thank you for inviting me.
And no, we'll have you back. I hope we're not done with this. Lisa,
no, absolutely. And I just want, if I could just say one quick thing.
Please, no, please.
People don't be intimidated by reading the Fair Tax book by Neil Bortz. He writes it in such a way that it makes sense. It's not like you're going to take an accounting or tax course at a college. He writes it in such a way where it's understandable. And so you'd be doing yourself and the country a big favor by getting a better understanding and help advocating for the fair tax.
And for the people, and this is my last word on the fair tax tonight, we've really got to go. But for the people who are on our side, who are for less government, who are for less intrusion into our lives, the fair tax is the cat's meow. I'm telling you, because the government has for your entire life, for as long as you can remember, if you're under 97 years old, the government has used that tax code to punish you for behaviors they don't want you to do, and to reward you for the behaviors they do want you to do. They controlled you 100% through the tax code, and now they can no longer do that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. We appreciate you coming along. Lisa, have the closing word tonight.
Okay. Don't forget to go to the Missouri Grassroots Coalition.org website. Take a look at our grass fire alert page. And also, don't forget to take a look at the Secret Santa page. We want to start pushing that pretty hard and raise some money. We want to help some families out at Christmas time by donating just, a couple dollars, really, literally a couple of dollars. If everybody just sent us a couple dollars through PayPal or check our money order, we could make a very big Christmas for some Missouri families who could not otherwise afford to do so.
Sign us off.
It's been great. Thanks for being here. This has been the Friday Night Roundtable for Missouri Grassroots Radio. We have great programming next week. Join us every night of the week. Thanks to Mike. Thanks to Dave. And we will see you here on the radio next week.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.